Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 143, recorded Thursday, August 9th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: how bad is business travel for your health, and make layovers fun. So coming to you today from a spiffed up Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, the production bay has been somewhat reassembled. Less sort of one piece of furniture in the name of decluttering, with the walls now painted a real estate agent approved shade of gray and beige, and the floor is redone from cherry to a bit more of a walnut, I would think, bowing to the presumed tastes of the millennial buyer. It's not bad. It's just different. Definitely lighter and brighter, though. I have to tell you, I was hoping to get this podcast out sooner this week. I had it all kind of put together over the weekend, but couldn't get it recorded. Then I had the mobile studio gear in my bag that went to Cincinnati and back without getting unpacked. And so now here we are on Thursday. You know, no spur-of-the-moment international trips here in July, but mostly, like I said, just sort of, you know, running around the Midwest, Cincinnati instead of Wisconsin. A bit too far of a drive, Cincinnati, so I'm losing the freedom to leave when I want, and I'm back to stooping through regional jet doorways. And back to having a schedule, quite honestly, jacked up by weather events thousands of miles away from me. As we talked about before in episodes before, the regional jet operators, sort of affiliates, of the big players, and they don't have spare jets available to step in and wipe out delays when one of their planes may encounter, you know, some sort of a weather mechanical, in along their daily bunny hop schedule. Last week, my American flight from Cincinnati to O'Hare was actually a textbook example of this. At 12:30 on the way back from lunch, I got my first delay notice for a 6 p.m. flight. It was just 20 minutes, so I didn't think that much of it. It was a nice day in both Cincinnati and Chicago, so I just chalked it up to the standard O'Hare traffic delays. But then the delays started to stretch as I got subsequent texts to 30 minutes, to 40 minutes, to an hour. So I fired up FlightAware and used the Where's My Plane Now functionality to try and figure out what was going on. Now, the nice thing about the FlightAware screen is that it shows you the flight path and the current weather. So my plane was traveling from Norfolk, Virginia to Miami and then up to Cincinnati, and I could see heavy storms all along the southeast coast. So the plane ended up leaving late out of Norfolk and then was having to vector down the Florida Gulf Coast to avoid the storms over the Atlantic coast. This, I could tell, was not looking good. FlightAware also shows a 10-day history of a flight's departure and arrival times. Now, this American flight had only arrived on time once, had also been canceled once, and then arrived late the remaining 8 times. So with a bit of time to kill now, I fired up Excel and calculated that this flight averaged an hour and 20-minute delay. And that's counting one on-time flight, but not counting the cancellation, because figuring out how to average in an infinite delay was a bit more work than I was willing to tackle at that time. So what was happening here wasn't a one-off weather delay. It was just a bad flight route. So as I'm wont to do when I've got some time to kill, I hit American Airlines on Twitter saying, hey, this flight has been delayed, canceled 8 out of the past 9 days. I kind of think America needs to rethink the scheduling for this one. And then I looked at the history of the United flight that was leaving around 6 p.m., one late flight in the past 10 days, and it flies back and forth between O'Hare and Cincinnati. Maybe not a great flight plan for the winter, but it was definitely better than flying through the humid South in July and August. I got to tell you, I'm switching. Besides, the beer selection at Cincinnati Airport won't keep me occupied through too many more long delays. So following up, even in the midst of the studio refurb, I managed to push out the long-promised Chicago Midway Layover Southside Taproom Tour video. I pushed it out, but I didn't manage to figure out how to come up with a shorter title. Anyhow, as I've said before, videos always take me longer than I think. But this one was fun, and I like the end result. I've said this before. One of the things I've liked about the craft beer explosion, in addition, of course, to good beer, is that searching out new microbreweries has taken me to parts of cities I would have never visited before, walking into the basement in Portland, Oregon, wondering how in the hell they got these huge steel tanks down here, or coming out of the Paris metro in the middle of what looked like now a North African neighborhood. So I hope that this Midway video has some of that same feel, skipping the parts of Chicago that make the tour guides or the TV shows, sort of the baseball theme park of Wrigleyville. Or we weren't on the lakefront. We weren't, you know, in the hipster enclaves of Wicker Park or Logan Square. Instead, we were guiding people to pass through some less noticeable neighborhoods, Douglas Park, Pilsen, Bridgeport, Back of the Yards. And if you haven't seen it already, check it out. You can either watch it on the Travel Commons Facebook page. You can go to the Travel Commons website and click through to YouTube. Or you can go just sort of natively to the YouTube. There's a Travel Commons channel on YouTube, or you can get to it through through Twitter also. Robert Fennerty left a comment on the YouTube channel. He said, hey, this might be an excellent way to help get my A-list status renewed this year, which I think, Robert, is an excellent idea. Rob Cheshire commented on the website talking about the on the video, talking about the Southside breweries that I feature on the video. Rob writes, hey, thanks, Mark. I will definitely build a visit to Mars and Low Res into my schedule for my August trip to Chicago. I'm a bit undecided about Weiner, which may be a bit too European in terms of my my tastes. I'm a bit conflicted about Lagunitas being part of the evil Heineken Empire. I have no doubt that they have some great beers, and the tasting room is a very cool spot. Thanks for that, Rob. Rob and I have been trading thoughts on Chicago breweries in the comments to different Travel Commons web posts and Untapped check-ins for a couple of months now leading up to his trip here in Chicago. Little does he know, though, that I'm going to hit him up the other way now for suggestions for my quick visit to Copenhagen in September. Rob has actually started his own blog, The Great Taproom Adventure, with notes on the taprooms he visits. Check out the show notes for a link to that. Keith Love, who describes himself a longtime listener, first-time caller, sent me a note a bit ago. He said he and his son were hitting Chicago early this month, so maybe already here, Keith, maybe for Lollapalooza. You'd be surprised, actually, at how many older folks go really hard on that four-day music festival. Keith asked me for some restaurant and taproom recommendations, which got me actually thinking that I should do a Chicago episode. But in lieu of that, I'll just pass along the list that I built for Keith, in case any of you guys are passing through Chicago sometime soon. You know, Keith asked for restaurant suggestions for good food, with good food and beer selections. I recommended, and also let me step back, because Keith said that he was going to be staying primarily in River North and in Oak Park. So actually, this list tends a little bit more toward the center and the north side of town, as opposed to the Midway taproom video, which covers the more, like I said, more of the south side neighborhoods. Anyhow, the recommendations I gave Keith on with some good food and beer selections, certainly the Public Inn, which is on Fulton Market, Cruz Blanc, which is a Mexican place from Rick Bayless, a top Mexican chef on Randolph Street. The Fountainhead, way further north and North Central. Hopleaf in Anderson, in the Andersonville neighborhood. The Purple Pig, which is a nice little tuck in along Michigan Avenue. Italy, which is in River North, kind of like a big Italian food Disneyland sort of thing. But there's a nice beer bar that they do with Dogfish Head at on the top floor. I gave them the recommendation of Fat Rice, a restaurant up in Logan Square that specializes in food from Macau. Phenomenal place. And then the Wiener Circle, which I've talked about on prior episodes, up in Lakeview. There's actually no beer there. but it's a great char Polish. And then Keith asked me sort of my favorite Chicago tap rooms, and again, sort of more north side stuff, because the four that I laid out in the Midway video, Lagunitas, Low Res, Mars, and Weiner, are all great places. But if you're tending more north, again, because Keith said he was staying up in River North, I said the Goose Island Tap Room that's on Fulton Street, not the brew pub, but the tap room, Half Acre Brewing, which is they've got their original tap room on Lincoln Avenue, or they've got a new larger one a little bit further north on Balmoral. The Revolution Brewery tap room that's and actually in the brewery on Kedzie, not the brew pub on Milwaukee. There's a whole sort of tap room crawl around along Ravenswood. There's four tap rooms, four breweries on Ravenswood between Foster and Irving Park Road. And then Dry Hop, which is in Lakeview. That's another cheat. It's more of a brew pub, but it's a great place. Good favorite of mine. So there you go. There's that list if anybody really cares, and it'll also be in the show notes. Keith also asked, though, if I had a favorite airport app to, as he said, actually guide you through airports and their amenities and services. I had to admit to Keith that I'm a bit more old school about this, and I use the maps that are posted around, though I will use Untappd to find the airport bars that have the best beer selection, which is how I killed a bit of time during that Cincinnati delay. If anybody uses an airport app, please let me know and I'll talk about it on the next episode. That'd be very helpful. The stint in Cincinnati has forced me to fly out of O'Hare first thing Monday morning, which really is the worst part of Road Warrior rush hour. I normally avoid Monday morning flights just like the plague, but my schedule for the past 3 to 4 weeks has just forced me into it. So that first Monday, I actually gave myself an extra 30 minutes, figuring that life is just way too short to hyperventilate in TSA lines. But even then, the line that was tailing out of the Terminal 3 pre-check queue, just it took my breath away. I mean, it was like halfway down the terminal, and honestly, I couldn't even catch up to the end of it. It grew faster than I could walk toward it as people just kept getting in line as they were arriving at the terminals. I was finally able to get in. I may have cut someone off. I don't know. The end of the line was a bit nebulous, people kind of muddling around, eventually forming a coherent line, kind of like the Traveler's version of, I don't know, a post-Big Bang dust cloud eventually forming a galaxy. But anyhow, I get in line and start walking back toward the pre-check station at a brisk pace. And I didn't really stop walking at a brisk pace until I stood at the little swinging gate waiting for the next available agent to check my license. Honestly, it was 5 to 7 minutes tops. It was amazing to me how many passengers they can process with 9 agents checking IDs and every screening machine running. And as importantly, with a line that's 90% experienced travelers. It was just this side of a precision drill squad. I got to tell you, I was very impressed. And again, kind of continue on the Cincinnati theme. I hadn't really spent that much time in the Cincinnati airport before. It's a very nice airport, but it feels a bit overbuilt, especially with Delta dehubbing it after it merged with Northwest. There's two terminals with a train running between them and to the main building. I mean, the train is fine as airplane trains go, no better or worse than Denver's or Atlanta's. But it seems a lot shorter. Indeed, the walk between the terminals is maybe 3 minutes. The train does seem a bit superfluous, or I don't know, that the Cincinnati airport is trying to punch above its weight a little bit. Though feeling a bit overbuilt, the Cincinnati airport does not have that sort of ghost town feeling that the Memphis airport had the last time I was there. I mean, there were concourses there where I did not see a single person. Now, Memphis is also a casualty of the Delta-Northwest merger. It was a Northwest hub that was shut down in favor of Delta's super hub in Atlanta. Memphis lost about 2/3 of its passenger traffic and actually is now spending millions of dollars to downsize, to shut down and mothball those empty concourses. There's actually a good New York Times story about this. I tweeted out a link to it while I was writing this over the weekend, but I'll also put the link in the show notes. And hey, if you have any travel questions, a story, a comment, travel tip, voice of the traveler, send them along. Email address, as always, comments, COMMENTS at traveltocommons.com. You can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or our new Instagram account at Travel Commons, or you can always go old school. Post those thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is how bad is business travel for your health? I stumbled across an article in the Harvard Business Review titled "Just How Bad Is Business Travel for Your Health? Here's the Data" by Dr. Andrew Rundle, a professor of epidemiology at Columbia University. His bio says his research focuses on the risks for and the consequences of sedentary, there you go, say that three times fast, sedentary lifestyles and obesity. The article summarizes his recent research, which boils down to employees who spend 14 or more nights away from home per month have significantly higher body mass index scores and are significantly more likely to report clinical symptoms of anxiety, depression, and alcohol dependence, no physical activity or exercise, smoking, and trouble sleeping. Other than that, how's the play, Mrs. Lincoln? The odds of being obese were 92% higher for those who traveled 21 or more nights per month. So, yeah, tell me something I don't already know. As somebody who's traveled for most of their 30 years of working. It does. It takes work, or I guess mindfulness is now the on-trend word. But it takes thought and thinking and mindfulness to eat right, exercise, and go to bed at a reasonable time when the guardrails of your normal routine disappear. Now, Rundle's population in this study is people who travel every week. I mean, in the U.S., many consultancies will shoot for what they call a 3-4-5 travel schedule for their full-time staff. You know, 3 nights, 4 days on the road, leaving Monday morning, returning Thursday night, which is why Monday mornings and Thursday nights are definitely road warrior rush hours. And then you end up with the 5th day in the office or working from home. And so depending on the number of weeks in the month, that's 12 to 15 nights a month on the road, which kind of maps into Rundle's 14 or more night population. Now, when I went into consulting and full-time travel, for me, the change was immediate. Working late and then project team dinners just basically rolled over what had been my evening workout routine. Eating out every meal blew up my regular diet, and waking up at 4 a.m. on Monday morning so I could catch the 6 a.m. flight to LaGuardia so I could be at my Midtown Manhattan client by 9:30 or 10 completely screwed up my sleep cycle for the next couple of days. I could see the effects on the guys in sort of my class, the guys who joined the firm in that, you know, the same summer or fall that I did, putting on weight, walking maybe a little bit slower through the airport, drinking a bit more at dinner, maybe missing an early morning meeting or call because they stayed out a bit too late. Now, I made some adjustments. I moved to morning workouts, became more mindful about what I was eating, ordering fish and vegetarian meals where I could, though there aren't always great options for the non-big three proteins, right? Non-beef, non-chicken, non-pork dishes when you're in places that aren't quite as metropolitan. So, I mean, when you're in New York or Chicago or San Francisco, easy for options. When you're in Dover, Ohio, Ephrata, Pennsylvania, Huntsville, Alabama, not so much. So I don't know, maybe this slowed down kind of the inevitable, but 10 years into my consulting career, we were actually on a family vacation with my folks. It was a Caribbean cruise, and one of the stops was along the Yucatan, the Mayan Riviera, as they were starting to call it. I walk out of the water up to our chairs. My dad looks up at me, says, "Well, you know, you've put a bit of weight on, haven't you?" Nice, my dad that way. I would have blown him off, except, you know, really, I knew it was true. He was just calling me out. I'd put 2 inches on my waist. I was carrying probably about 20 pounds more than when I had started. I was heading in the same direction as my colleagues, even though maybe, you know, at a slower pace. I was able to reverse the trend, and I think one of the key reasons was by then I was senior enough to have more control over my schedule. I was managing projects rather than being managed, and so I could relieve the expectation of nightly team dinners. Kind of at least once a week, everybody was on their own, and no pressure if you bagged out other nights. I'd turn in early on Monday nights when most of us had gotten up way early to fly out. We'd pick hotels with good workout rooms and where we could walk to clients and walk to restaurants rather than drive all the time, where that was possible. Again, more metropolitan, more urban than suburban. And where I could, I'd negotiate remote work weeks with the client, you know, save them on expense money and give our team a break from the airport and help them kind of get, you know, at least have a week occasionally where they were staying, where those guide rails were present at home. It took work to break out of the usual, the default behaviors, you know, kind of that mindfulness thing again. You know, thinking back on it, though, I guess I'm surprised that the firms I was with were expecting me to figure this out on my own. There were always travel policies on spending limits and, you know, the requirement to, you had to use the corporate travel agency and what receipts were needed on expense reports and when you could fly in business class. But there was no real guidance or support on how to lead at least somewhat of a healthy life on the road. I don't know, maybe because the people writing those policies weren't traveling, right? The accountants and the HR managers were paying for their own meals and going home every night, maybe a bit jealous thinking that we were living it up, you know, every night eating steak dinners and drinking bottles of wine, which, you know, actually some of us were because we weren't mindful enough to think about another way. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is make layovers fun. You know, one of the most sacred top frequent flyer rules is fly direct. Be it winter with snow or summer with thunderstorms, adding that intermediate stop adds just one more point of failure, one more opportunity for the airlines to screw up. But with a bit of, I don't know, planning and call it an adventuring frame of mind, you can actually manufacture something good, say a mini tour, out of a connection. And that's been the inspiration behind 2 Travel Commons videos, the Midway layover taproom tour that I talked about before, and the O'Hare layover excursion that I did almost 6 years ago, and that is still getting regular hits on YouTube. To do it right, though, takes a bit of planning and time. I mean, you've got to factor in all the delay points, getting off the plane, stashing your luggage if you carried on, getting to and from where you're going, and then coming back through security when you return. For most airports, and given where they're located, I think it's tough to do a good layover tour with less than 4 hours of layover time. You know, remember, this is supposed to be a fun day break, not yet another travel stressor. Now, United Airlines used to have a series in their Hemisphere in-flight magazine called One City, 5 Hours that would outline a 5-hour layover tour in a different city, Reno, Albuquerque, Copenhagen. One of the first Travel Commons videos is actually me following their Frankfurt tour on a 6-hour layover between Mumbai and Chicago. Now, United has stopped doing these quite some time ago, and these articles are tough to find even on Google. But I've managed to dredge up actually the Copenhagen one from the Hemisphere's archives, and I'm going to give it a go at the end of this month. I've also put links in the show notes, like I said, to this Copenhagen one that I found, as well as the Frankfurt tour one that I used back, 7 years ago, whatever. In episode 130 last year, I talked about how my son and I passed up a 90-minute connection in Vienna for an 8-hour one, and then spent a Saturday eating schnitzel and drinking beer in the old section of town with a buddy of mine who came down from Poland. And I kind of think that sort of that 5 to 8 hour span is about right. Now, there are some exceptions. The quick shopping jaunt from, say, Minneapolis Airport to Mall of the Americas can be done in less than that. But I don't know, even if you're hitting the Blue Lagoon that's nearby Reykjavik Airport in Iceland on your WOW Air layover, I'd still give it 4 hours, especially given the WOW check-in lines I stood in the last time I flew them. Jim McDonough felt that time squeeze a couple of months ago, commenting on the Midway layover tour Facebook posting. Jim said, "We had a 4-hour layover at O'Hare back in May on our way to Ireland. American did a schedule change, which made a planned 2-hour layover into 4, but we did not leave the airport. Somehow on international, didn't make sense. Had some bad free beer at the Admiral's Club." Yeah, I've seen that bad free beer too. You know, and Jim's right, it would have been snug. You know, he and his wife maybe could have swung down to Logan Square, Wicker Park. Both are stops on the blue line that goes, that's the subway line that goes between O'Hare and downtown. And that's about halfway down. They could have maybe gotten out for a bite and a bit of a walk around. But I mean, they would have needed a solid plan for that, which is tough with a last minute schedule change. But you know, even unplanned layovers can work sometimes. Several years ago, my parents flew from Denver to Paducah, Kentucky to visit my aunt, my grandmother. And as you can imagine, there are no direct flights, so they connected through O'Hare. And as you might guess, on the way home, their commuter flight was late out of Paducah. We talked about that a little earlier, and they missed the tight connection in O'Hare. So my dad called me from the airport. It was actually New Year's Eve night, and we were having 3 or 4 couples over. I told him, "Look, get your luggage and book the flight out tomorrow. You can come and help me cook dinner." So I flew up to O'Hare, picked up my folks, brought them back home, threw an apron at my dad, opened an early bottle of champagne, and actually, we had a great time. So that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 143. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Even better, I hope you decide to tell somebody to subscribe. And even more than that, if you feel the urge, giving us a review in any of the places you can give a podcast review. So in Google, in iTunes, maybe in Stitcher, give us a like in SoundCloud, wherever you happen to listen. That would be great. Speaking of which, you can find us, I think right now, the places you can find us, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn. You can ask Alexa to play Travel Commons. Of course, iTunes and the Google app, Google Podcast app. Check out the show notes for music links. As always, if you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text or audio file, comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. M. Peacock on Twitter. There's the Travel Commons Facebook page. There's the Travel Commons Instagram site. You can always post it on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the Facebook page and the website. So Rob and Jim and the whole gang, thank you very much. Really appreciate that. For me, probably the next time we talk will be kind of mid-September. September, heading out at the end of this month. Going to be doing a couple days, like I said, a couple days in Copenhagen, a few days in Brussels, and then back to Scotland to take my daughter to St. Andrews. And then taking a quick swing and overnight down through London, rather than taking the United flight, the direct United flight from Edinburgh to O'Hare on an old beat up, beat to hell 757, decided to go down, fly from Edinburgh to London City Airport, and then overnight in London, and then pick up an American flight, the direct flight from London to O'Hare on a brand new 787. So I had the time, so decided to go for the better equipment this time. But until we talk again, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.